A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 187. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion about the Secret Service. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, a 1969 Gerry Anderson Super Marination show that ran for 13 episodes of 25 minutes each. Strangely, not seen by the entire UK, only apparently broadcast in 3 of the ITV regions for reasons that are not entirely clear, and also an unusual Gerry Anderson show because it mixed much more live-action work in with the characteristic super marination puppets and detailed models that we've come to expect from an Anderson production. So there's quite a lot of human actors that can be seen, particularly in wide shots when they need somebody to move or drive a car or a close-up of a hand to operate something.
Yes, absolutely. This was the show that marked the transition from Gerry Anderson's puppetry, the super marionation with the marionettes, to live action. And we would later have live action shows from Gerry Anderson like UFO and Space 1999. This was the show where they were using the puppets, but bringing in as much live action as they can in various ways. So it's quite unusual in that way.
Okay, so last time we talked about the setup, about how Father Stanley Unwin has this machine that will shrink things down to a third of their normal size, and how usually he'll use this to send his gardener, who's actually a Secret Service agent called Matthew, into action. So let's look at some of the episodes and some of the missions that they go on, Brian.
Yeah, the episodes are usually standalone, and they typically involve Matthew being miniaturized and a sort of two-person secret agent team where Matthew, with being 2 feet tall, can sneak around and find out information and occasionally sabotage machinery and that sort of thing. And Stanley Unwin, being a priest and dressed as a priest and everything, is sort of innocuous in appearance and is able to make his way into situations and gain information and gain people's confidence this way. He also has this strange form of gibberish that he can speak very quickly that seems to almost influence or hypnotize people, that once he starts speaking in this way, people agree with him or agree to help him or follow him and this sort of thing.
Yes, it's not entirely sure how that works, but it certainly does seem to work and gets them into all sorts of secret bases and the like. Matthew's not the only thing to be shrunk. The Model T Ford that we talked about last time, this very distinctive car that Father Unwin drives, that shrunk at least once, I think a couple of times. And other characters also get shrunk. I believe sometimes it's the bad guys who are reduced to a third of their normal size. So there are some other bits and pieces going on, and of course we've got some other futuristic vehicles to sort of present the other extreme from the Model T Ford, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. There was a strange episode that was called Errand of Mercy that was basically the entire episode was a dream. And it didn't really involve the shrinking, but it involved Father Unwin and Matthew in the Model T Ford, nicknamed Gabriel, which in this dream world, the Model T is able to fly. So not the flying car that we would expect, but there it is. And it is apparently one of the most maneuverable and powerful the things in the sky. So it ends up with this whole sort of chase around aerial episode. And that was quite different and actually quite fun. I quite enjoyed it.
Okay, so we have a flying car. We have another episode called Recall to Service, where Father Unwin is basically back in his old military uniform, as he and Matthew have to try and prevent the sabotage of a new computer-controlled super tank. And of course, having a tank means that Derek Medins and his team got to produce some amazing models and to drive them along some sort of specially made landscapes, and lots of tension and drama ensues as the tank appears to go out of control and Matthew has to struggle to get it back into the right hands and back on the right track. So that one's fairly interesting, exciting, and it also has that sort of, I think it gives you that typical feel, Matthew being shrunk, delivered to the special assignment, and then having to manipulate something because he's so small and can fit into places that nobody else can get.
Yes, absolutely. And the signature Derek Medding / Jerry Anderson model work and the vehicles and explosions and things, that is very much here and very much like what we had seen in the earlier series that they had done. The final episode, More Haste, Less Speed, features the Tiger Moth aircraft that had appeared in the film Thunderbird 6. So we do get a certain amount of reuse of models coming up there.
Yes, we mentioned that last time. There's a little bit of recycling. Some of the puppets you'll probably recognise, particularly I think the Captain Scarlet puppet, who has a new wig and a pair of glasses and turns up as Agent Blake. But lovely to see the Tiger Moth aircraft again, which I believe was famously piloted by a female stunt pilot, a very well-known stunt pilot at the time, and does some quite remarkable stuff.
Yes, absolutely. Spin-offs. There were a couple of novels based on the series, The Destroyer and The VIP, both released in 1969, and both written by John William Jensen, who was actually writing under the name John Thaden, and wrote several Jerry Anderson-based novels. So there were those two that came out that same year that the show was broadcast.
I was quite interested to learn that. I mean, I guess the Jerry Anderson sort of novels must be reasonably collectible now. I think secondhand copies are out there. I've never come across any myself. If you own any of these John Thaden Anderson novels, we'd love to see a picture of them up on the Facebook page.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about those. I know there have also been some more recent novels written based on the Jerry Anderson Supermarionation shows.
Oh, interesting stuff. Yeah. As I say, not actually read any of them myself. Would be fascinated to learn more about them. Now, as we've said, unfortunately, this show was intended to be a big hit and a big be sold to the American television networks. But unfortunately, Lou Gray, the head of ITC, didn't like the show. He couldn't understand Stanley Unwin's gobbledygook. And as a result, it's not been, or it wasn't a great success at the time in 1969.
Lou Grade was usually a big supporter of the work that Jerry Anderson was doing. So having him be so unimpressed with this particular series, that would have been quite a blow for this one.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have to wonder at the reasons why it didn't succeed and why it was only shown on three networks. Some of it may be, obviously, because Lou Gray didn't like Stanley Unwin, or at least he didn't like his peculiar talent, which was very popular on television in the 60s and 70s and even into the 80s. If you want to get a flavour of what he would do with his sort of his own gobbledygook language, I know that Chris on the Facebook page posted a link to a television commercial that Stanley Unwin did for Amstrad word processors when he speaks this nonsense. So you sort of get the idea from that. But as we know, Lou Grade was not impressed with this particular feature of the show. Also, we have, from Gerry Anderson's commentary, we know that he thought they had mastered the Super Marionation puppetry to such an extent by this stage that actually the puppets were capable of doing more talk-based dramatic episodes, that they had the lip-syncing down to an absolute T, and he thought the puppets could carry the drama. So particularly, I think, in the early episodes, there's an awful lot of talking and not too much doing, although I did notice that as the series progressed, there were far more sort of models and explosions, I think, as they realised that they needed a bit more oomph in some of the episodes. Interestingly, Gerry Anderson does say on the commentary that actually he thinks it was a mistake about the early sort of talky episodes, that he was wrong about that. So he realizes himself it perhaps wasn't the best idea.
Yeah, that's right. Also, the 1960s craze of spy shows and the great popularity of spy shows and these spy-fi shows that mixed some science fiction in with their spy worlds, that was starting to dwindle and come to an end. The Man from U.N.C.L.E. ended the previous year in 1968. The Avengers ended in 1969, and that had been a huge phenomenon in the U.K., Mission Impossible did continue on a few years longer. It went until 1973, but its cast was changing, and it was changing in tone, and it was possibly not quite the big spy show that it had been in the 60s.
Okay, so there was that feature, or that factor, I suppose, but also we know that at this stage, Lou Grade was getting Gerry Anderson to move his Century 21 production team from the studios in Slough to the Pinewood Studios, where they were gearing up for UFO and for other live-action work. And as we said last time, they were also working on the film Doppelganger, which was also known as The Other Side of the Sun, which also came out in 1969. So I suppose they might have been spreading themselves a bit thin at this time, Brian. There was a lot going on for the Century 21 team.
Yes, and I think Lou Grade was probably at the view by this point that the puppet shows were done and live action was the way to go for this team.
What have we here? A genuine Model T. What year is it? 1917. I'm delighted to see you're an enthusiast too, sir, but I'm in a terrible hurry.
Hang on, old boy. The headlamps. Well, surely they're not authentic.
Oh, yes, they are. You'll find that metrics is so which Henry Ford did use it of that. Oh, yes.
Oh, well, you see the colour. That's wrong. Any colour, just as long as it's black, old Henry Ford used to say.
Now, I must insist, sir, when you're putting a finger load on whatever your mission threat for this and guiding people over does, this is always removing the eyebolt, right?
Well, I was just pointing out.
Always enjoying the time for a chat, but must strictly have on the mission load off that. Oh, yes. Goodbye, goodbye.
Okay. So it's that time when we start to get into our own views about this show and about which bits worked well and which bits we weren't quite so keen on. Brian, which aspect of the show would you like to start us off with?
Well, I have to say this show was actually quite fun because it was rather silly. I don't think it took itself as seriously as some of the earlier Super Marionation shows, at least in some cases. So I enjoyed some of the fun of it. The Stanley Unwin gibberish thing was okay. I thought it was overused, but I did think it was sort of a not bad thing to have in there.
Okay, I mean, yes, it is a peculiar aspect, Stanley Unwin and his gobbledygook. Inexplicably popular at the time. It depends, I suppose, what you feel about it. It's an odd aspect of this show, and quite how it works when he bluffs his way into all these situations, I don't know, but it does.
Yes, that is rather strange. But what I liked more about that character was how they played the idea of everyone trusting the priest, because he's a priest walking around in full garb. No one challenges him or is suspicious of him, and he's able to do a lot of investigation and a lot of things without people paying too much attention to him.
He gets away with a lot of stuff that perhaps other people wouldn't because of his appearance.
Exactly. I thought that was fairly well done.
It is, of course, a Gerry Anderson show, and we love a Gerry Anderson show because of the model work and the explosions and all the highly detailed stuff that goes on. We should say, I suppose, that the Father Unwin puppet is a remarkable bit of modelling when you see what the actor looked like himself at the time. The Model T Ford is rather quaint, I suppose, Brian, but rather fun.
Yes, absolutely. I think one thing more on the negative side that I have to bring up is the amount of repetition in this show. Now, for a long time in the Gerry Anderson shows, they would film something once and use that clip many times over. You have to remember, for example, the Thunderbirds launch sequences for the various vehicles. We would see each vehicle take off in exactly the same way in almost every episode. Well, in this, we see the same shot of Stanley Unwin activating the shrinking machine and it running, and then the visual of Matthew shrinking. Now, that was a very well put together piece of film there. It was very good, but it was reused in almost every episode.
Yes, you'll get very used to that Bible coming down off the shelf, being opened, and the scene of Matthew standing against the bookshelves and then being shrunk down to a third size, along with the shot of his little chair coming out of the suitcase that he climbs into, or rather he sort of slides into on this motorized device.
And the Model T pulling out of the place where they're based and pulling out onto the road and driving off. We see that shot again over and over, almost every episode.
Yes, that's right. As you say, once they've got a good shot, they do tend to use it rather a lot. And it does tend to make some of the episodes a bit repetitive, and the basic themes remain the same. Getting Father Unwin and Matthew into the secret place so they can do the thing and foil the bad guys. As I've said, some of the early episodes, they did a lot more dialogue than they perhaps would normally do with the puppets. Later on, I think they shift to some more things going bang and some big explosions, the sort of stuff we used to with Derek Meddings and the team.
Yes, and the more they would get into playing around with all sorts of odd things in it, I thought the better it worked on this sort of, you know, silly oddball kind of level, where you would have things like that episode Errand of Mercy that was basically entirely a dream sequence with the flying Model T Ford. And there was an episode called The Cure that had the miniaturized Model T driving out onto a racetrack and, you know, had all these things being juggled around with different medications and things. And it was these sort of oddball, absurd things that I think were the most interesting ones.
Okay, so it is, as you say, it is a slight oddity. It is perhaps deliberately slightly sillier than some of the other Anderson shows. Doesn't take itself so seriously, perhaps. An interesting one. And of course, this strange fact that it wasn't seen by a lot of people in the 1960s and perhaps has only been discovered in the last 10 years since it's been out on DVD.
That's right. And it gives you the odd visuals where you will see someone sitting at a desk working and it's clearly a wide shot of a person, and then you have a close-up of a puppet that's clearly meant to be the same character sitting there, and you know, you'll see someone walk in and then, you know, camera shot changes and you're looking at a puppet. So that's something that is a little bit strange that you have to get used to, for sure.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, the contrast between the live actors and the puppets. Interestingly, on the Facebook group, again, Chris commented about this show that when he showed it to his sons, who were big fans of the other Gerry Anderson shows, they couldn't quite make the shift from live actors to puppets the whole time, and they didn't like this one, although he likes it himself. It is perhaps, as Michael on the Facebook page says, it's somewhat of an acquired taste, perhaps, this one, The Secret Service, Brian.
Yes, it definitely is sort of an oddity, and in or out of the Gerry Anderson shows, I don't know of anything else that has this sort of look to it, or this sort of style of how it plays out and the production and the storytelling. It's really quite unusual.
Can I ask you about the theme tune, Brian, and what you think of the Mike Sam singers or the Swingle singers impersonation that they're doing and what you thought of it?
I thought it was fairly well done. I enjoy it. I think it is a little overused when it starts coming into the episodes as well as the opening title sequence. I liked how they incorporated the church bell into it, and it sort of opens as a very traditional church music, formal type of piece with no words, and then transitions into this jazzy Swingle singer style arrangement, but keeps the church bell in there. I thought that was quite well done. I think the Mike Sam singers did a nice job with it. They're not the Swingle singers, and they didn't have the full range that they would have had in that style. I thought it was reasonably well done. I always enjoyed it, but it was somewhat overused. What did you think of it, Eamon?
Well, it is, as I say, another acquired taste. I would recommend our listeners to go to YouTube, where you can see the opening titles of The Secret Service and make up your own minds. Personally, it drove me mad. I couldn't. I'd have to fast forward through that bit and actually get to the show because it annoyed me so much. But there you go. That's just how I feel about that sort of singing.
It is worth seeing at least once, for sure.
Yes, do go to YouTube and check out the title. It will tell you, you know, you'll probably get an idea of whether you're going to like this show from that. So I guess it's time for recommendations and our own feelings about this, Brian. Are we ready?
I think so. Why don't you go first, Eamon?
Oh dear. Okay. I didn't really like The Secret Service. It is a tricky one. It's an acquired taste. Personally, I would rather our listeners spent their money on any of the other Gerry Anderson Super Mario Nation shows from the 60s. I had a hard time with it, partly because of the theme tune, partly because of Stanley Unwin and his gobbledygook. It all does seem a little bit silly, although there are some charming aspects such as the car and the man in the suitcase. But my personal recommendation would be look elsewhere before you come to the Secret Service. However, Brian, I think your view is slightly different.
Yes, to a point. I actually kind of enjoyed this for its silliness and its absurd off-the-wall aspect. And probably, if I were not watching it for British Invaders and I had it there, I would look at a couple episodes here and there to get some of that odd, strange silliness. It's sort of fun, but definitely not for everyone, and definitely a strange oddity of a piece. This was only a couple of years after Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons, which, as a Super Mario Nation show, was a far better show than this. It had better storytelling, it had a better, more interesting overall setup, it had more compelling characters and performances. The Secret Service is kind of a fun little oddity, so if you want to see something a little different for fun, maybe check it out, but I can't give it any more than a very cautious recommendation.
Okay, and as ever, if you feel we've got it wrong about The Secret Service, if you have any of the novelizations, or if you can answer the mystery of why it was only shown on 3 of the transmitter networks in ITV, then please do get in touch with us, drop us an email, or come by the Facebook group and help us out.
Absolutely. So, in summary, The Secret Service was a 1969 series that combined supermarionation puppetry, as Gerry Anderson was famous for doing, but in this case, combined with live-action backgrounds and sequences, and told us the story of Father Stanley Unwin, who was really a spy and worked with Matthew, who was also a spy, posing as Father Unwin's gardener. And it gave us this shrinking machine that would allow someone or something, usually Matthew, to be shrunk to 1/3 size. And it would bring Father Unwin and the miniaturized Matthew into these spy adventure shows that also featured this strange gobbledygook gibberish type of language that Father Unwin would speak. A strange little oddity of a mixture of live action and puppetry in this silly little show with some nice absurdity in it from time to time.
An oddity indeed. And come back next time when we perhaps might be on slightly safer ground. We're doing an episode that we're calling Doctor Who, Not the First Doctor. We are looking at 3 particular Doctor Who related items. So that's the 2 Peter Cushing movies from the 1960s, Doctor Who and the Daleks, and Daleks Invasion Earth 2150 AD. And then to add to those, at a listener's request, really, from the Facebook group, we will be looking at the very recent An Adventure in Space and Time, the BBC's sort of biopic, as it were, of the creation of Doctor Who that was originally broadcast, this particular show, in 2013. So probably the most recent show we've covered, and some interesting stuff to talk about when we get to these various Doctor Who related items, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. About once a year, we do a spin-off style show where we, instead of talking about a British television series, we talk about the spin-offs from that series into other media and other types of shows. So this will be this year's show talking about spin-offs from, in this case, Doctor Who.
Yep, absolutely. Some fascinating stuff to get to.
So you can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. We are part of the Geek Culture Network, so you can find us at TheGeekCultureNetwork.com. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find our Facebook group there.
Also, if internet radio is your thing and you're interested in other geek-related shows, come along and find us on the Voice of Geeks internet streaming radio at vognetwork.com. British Invaders goes out Mondays and Tuesdays, but we also have lots of other shows there. Interesting community. You may find something else that you quite like to listen to there as well.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much indeed, and until next time, it's Eamon Apole in old Ingley Bode singling off with Deep Joy.